Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Bob Retall. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review.
This is Weekly Comics Spotlight 288 for comics originally released on February 13th, 2013. Now, starting us off in DC is Katana number 1. This is part of the fourth or fifth wave of titles from the New 52. I've kind of lost count. Some of the waves have been big, some are small. And this is billed on the cover as Out of the Pages of Justice League of America. And, of course, that title ships next week. This character is actually currently out of Birds of Prey. And I've been following this character, Bob, since she was originally introduced back in the original Batman and the Outsiders series.
I read that, too.
I was going to say, I kind of figured you'd follow the character the whole time. They, with the New 52, completely revamped the costume. I kind of like the old look a little better. This one's not bad. But throughout the entire, 30-year-ish run of the character, I've always liked her, thought she was interesting. Never really considered her to be a character that really needed her own title. I mean, what was your kind of thoughts on that?
I'm pretty much in the same place. I mean, as being a member of a team, you see her come in to Birds of Prey. Cool. You know, I like the character fine. When she was in Batman and the Outsiders, any of the other places she's appeared over the years, as a supporting character, just fine. I have never at any point felt, wow, I would love to read a Katana standalone series. I mean, I feel the same way about Vibe, who we see an ad for in this very issue, who's getting his own thing. Although, actually, on Vibe, I've more like not cared too much for him in any of the appearances that I've seen him in. So, seeing him get his own series, but
I guess the difference I would have between those two characters. I think Katana could carry a series. I don't think she should carry a series. With Vibe, I don't really feel in the past he could carry a series and certainly should not try to carry a series. So, I mean, to me, there's a subtle difference there, but I see where you're at. Yeah.
I mean, for me, a good Katana series, you know, what I would enjoy seeing in a Katana series is basically the character Kabuki by David Mack, and I don't need to read Katana. I can go read Kabuki by David Mack. You know, it's just, I don't see the purpose of it. But that's me personally. I mean, there was nothing in this issue that I particularly disliked. I thought it was a good solid issue. I mean, I'll just amend that. The one thing I didn't care for, not a big thing because it's used so much in comics, is the starting on a fight scene and then flashing back to a few days ago. Just that is done so much. It bugs me all the time. Get over it is all I tell myself. I see that because comics writers love to do that. It's just, you know, they want to start out on the action scene and, you know,
well, that's really the,
I know, it's just, they do it in TV shows and movies and things like that too. It's a standard trope. I don't care for it, but it's not something that cripples the issue or anything. It's just something that I look at and say, you know, don't care for it. But, you know, the issue itself, it's a good, I thought it served as a good introduction to the Katana character. For someone who's not that particularly familiar with her, I mean, they give you, you know, some of the training stuff so you can see, okay, she's, you know, keeping up. They talk about the sword, although, you know, the sword, you know, they get a little weird with the sword. It's like they talk, you know, you've known in the past that her husband's soul or whatever is in this sword, but, you know, going to bed with the sword and fondling the sword and stuff, okay, you know, I can understand, but it's just kind of weird. I don't need to see that necessarily. I thought this is not really a spoiler, but, you know, just the training sequence with, you know, all the paint covered sticks flying at her. Okay.
In the place she just moved into.
Yeah. It was pretty elaborate setup. It's like, and, you know, so, okay, didn't turn out quite the way she had hoped, and I was a little disappointed with that. And then, you know, it's just, it was an okay issue. I didn't love it, didn't hate it. It was an okay comic.
That was kind of where I came down too. I mean, it was an okay first issue. It set up the important aspects of the character, the situation, the conflict. And I think, despite the how did she get all of those things in that training room so quickly, I thought that was a key scene. Because it flat out says, if I am worthy of my katana, my soul taker, I will block them all. And she doesn't block them all. But, you know, later we see that the sword itself can basically, you know, it's not just got the ability to absorb souls, but the souls can apparently take over the sword and improve the swordsmanship or whatever. And the hilt and stuff, very different than we've seen this sword before. At least pre-Flashpoint. I'm trying to remember what it looked like in Birds of Prey. It
doesn't actually have a hilt like a katana. Right?
Well, it's got a hilt like a skull.
Yeah, it's the sword, especially like if you look at it on the cover, it doesn't look like a katana particularly at all. The blade is too thick, and you know that extra piece of guard on it is not something that I'm not an expert on katanas or anything, but it doesn't look very katana-ish to me.
If you go back to the page where she's in bed with the sword, it's about two pages before the staple opposite the Animal Man ad.
Yep.
You get a good look at the hilt and the skull kind of a thing on it, and it's like, okay, this is a very different looking sword than, again, the classic version. And again, nothing right or wrong about that. It's very interesting. It's a very busy kind of a sword hilt or whatever, which I'm curious how certain artists are going to like dealing with or not.
I'm guessing that different artists are going to deal with it by just ignoring that and drawing it however the heck they want to draw it. Like, for instance, the artist on the cover, because the sword on the cover doesn't look like the sword that's actually in the issue.
Yeah.
But they put it on the cover of the number one issue.
Does make you wonder. I think they did a couple of things that were interesting and probably smart moves in terms of positioning for this title. Placing it in Japantown and San Francisco gives it a bit of a different feel than most other superhero titles. The inherent kind of martial arts, ninja, you know, action and stuff also helps sets it apart. And while it is a good read, there was nothing that made it particularly exceptional. And really, unless you're a huge fan of the character or the creators, it's kind of just another title in the New 52. Now, that having been said, there are no real titles of the New 52 universe, you know, or there are no real ties to other titles in the New 52 universe other than Katana herself. So there's no mention of the Justice League of America. There is a mention of the Outsiders, but it's very much a very different take on the Outsiders. And it sounded like, and again, go to the page with the staple and they've got it, that the clans of the Outsiders are here or whatever. And it sounds like they're some group of clans from Japan or whatever that are having their influence or whatever over here, maybe, but not any kind of superhero group called the Outsiders that we've ever seen before. Maybe not even a superhero group at all, kind of a deal. So they're using the name in a very different way. Which, you know, on the one hand is cool. On the other hand, they're trying to, the New 52, play it both ways of, well, the big storylines before happened, but now any real big storyline with any of the Outsider groups kind of couldn't have happened at this point. And frankly, the one thing that I think in the past would have made a Katana series very interesting, very kind of vibrant, and added a very fun dynamic to it is if they had done it back in the days of the early, you know, Batman and the Outsiders stuff, or at any point where she essentially had Halo as kind of her sidekick, and doing almost a female Batman and Robin kind of a thing, where she was the dark brooding type and Halo was the bright bubbly type, could have had a very interesting dynamic there. But we really haven't seen Halo, certainly since Flashpoint and even pre-Flashpoint, other than an appearance or two around the Brightest Day or the, was it that or the 52? It was actually the 52 series. We hadn't seen her in ages. But I think that's the kind of character that would not fit in this series, but is a good counterpoint to the Katana character.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I think the way they've repositioned some stuff, kind of takes away from an opportunity they had that they never took advantage of in the past. So, and then how this character is going to fit in with the Justice League of America, we'll find out next week. But given how much they're pushing this is out of, you know, Birds of Prey, out of Justice League of America, and then there's no mention of anything else from the New 52 universe in here, That surprised me a little. I think it was probably a smart move in so much as it makes it that much more accessible. I mean, likewise, we get enough about Katana, her sword, the Soul Taker, to get the story moving, but no heavy baggage from what had happened in Birds of Prey or anywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's a balancing act of how do you introduce what you got to in a first issue to make it accessible, yet not introduce so much that it feels like it's not really a first issue, yet also not blatantly ignore everything that happened in the past. So, and this did a decent balance with that, I guess.
What do you think of the art?
The art was in some places better than others. I thought it was acceptable, not one I'm going to say, wow, I'm going to follow everything this artist ever does.
I thought it suited the series.
I would agree with that.
I mean, it's not like, I mean, same as you. I mean, I didn't look at it and say, wow, I need to go out and seek out this artist everywhere, you know, that he works, Alex Sanchez. But I thought he did a good job on this issue. I thought that his art style was a good match for the story being told, especially some of the fight scenes and action kind of moments. He did a good job on. One thing that was kind of peculiar to me, coloring wise, near the end and, you know, in other places, how they draw a Katana with like a uniform. Actually, it starts on the first page, right? Which is really a flashback to the end anyway, or a flashback from the end, I guess. Where she's got this generally gray skin tone everywhere. And like in the one scene where she's getting dressed, it looks like she's got like a gray, you know, body stocking or something on, you know, that goes up to her neck.
Yeah.
But I don't understand how her entire face becomes gray when she puts this half shell mask on. So that was kind of peculiar. It's kind of like that Batwoman having vampire white skin thing that kind of bugs me.
Go to the page after the staple. We see the girl with the tattoos.
Right.
Okay. These two pages struck me as something that a couple of artists could have just blown us away with. Not many artists. But imagine somebody with like a George Perez level of kind of the hyper detail and stuff where we would have gotten just an amazing rendition of the tattoos and stuff there. Again, to me, that's kind of an over, above, and beyond kind of a deal. I don't expect that from most artists. I think this artist gave us enough detail there to kind of imply and not go kind of crazy. But on that next page where we get the smoke on the candle.
Yeah, the smoke is bad.
Yeah, it was just busy. But then, on the next page.
But you know what? That smoke on the candle, I think the color job on that, with the black background all around it, that makes it seem less like smoke than it could be. And maybe it's because it's like too heavily inked or something also.
That could be.
That smoke didn't look good.
A very smoky candle, you know. But you go on the next page flip when she actually puts the half mask on, bottom of the face doesn't change colors. Page flip again. First page, she's got the normal skin tone for the face. It's not until the bottom corner where she becomes all gray. So to me, that's a coloring issue.
Or maybe it's like got something to do with when she starts using the sword and it does something, it like changes her skin tone. I don't know.
She's using the sword in some of the pages where it has.
I mean, like, maybe when she's, like, channeling some extra special portion of its soul power or something, as opposed to just takes a while to kick in or something. I'm grasping at straws here on explaining how this could actually be, but, you know, it's just like, all of a sudden, she does seem to just, her skin tone has gone gray. And it seems to be a choice. I mean, like, because on the cover, she's colored that way, too, so.
Yeah. Don't know.
Anyway, I mean, I give it a 3 out of 5. It was it was an okay comic. It's not something that I feel the need to continue getting, at least for myself.
To me, it was a 3 out of 5. It's something that I'm not going to recommend to people unless they're a fan of the creators or the character, but I think it's a decent read. I'm curious where it's going to go. I like the fact they're trying to set it apart from the other superhero titles, just by nature of the martial arts and, you know, that kind of almost Hong Kong action adventure aspect and the Japantown tone and style. So it'll at least look and feel a little different, even though it is just another superhero title.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I can see where you and a lot of other people, it's like they're not going to follow it because that's all it is. It's just another title. I think in this day and age, particularly in the New 52 and Marvel Universes, you got to do something different, better, and I don't say groundbreaking, but not just another title.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's like the same, you know, if I was back when I was getting most every DC title, I would have gotten this and been quite happy. It's like, I'm following everything, may as well do it. And I, in actual reality, I was buying everything and I wasn't actually reading everything because I couldn't consume that many comic books in a month, right? And, you know, now I'm down to a point where, you know, I get about 25 books a week, maybe 30 books in some weeks, and I can read 25 or 30 books in a week. I can't read 50 or 60 books necessarily in a week. So I'm at a good level right now.
Just for comparisons, this week I got 42 and I've read them all.
Yeah.
So, but it makes for a busy week for me at times.
I got 25, 26 maybe. 27. I got 27 and I have about four that I haven't gotten to yet.
But that's one of the things that these creators and publishers need to be thinking about when they put out new titles is the competition and the budgeting things they're going up against. Money. Does it cost enough? Does it warrant the cost it's got? Time. Do people have enough time to read this? Do they get enough enjoyment out of the time they spend on it? And space. Because, I mean, these things do build up after time. And that's where digital comes into play and helps on the space issue. But even that, I think, is going to become a crippling factor once people get a big enough digital collection in Comixology or whatever to have to sift through.
Yeah, that's true. Move on to Secret Avengers number one.
Yes, this is the new volume. The previous volume, of course, ended last week. So we've had all of about 7 days to you know, get over that title, which, frankly, was pretty easy to get over. You know, in light of the solicit and stuff, that first page, I think really sold the concept in light of the solicit. If you don't recall the solicit, that first page may be a little more confusing.
Yeah, I didn't recall the solicit. I kind of picked up on it as we went along, but again, here we have a, first page that happens not necessarily at the beginning of the story.
This is a scene we flash forward to and then see and then later flash back to.
Right.
So we get this scene, aspects of it, three times. But I think we kind of almost needed to with this one. And the basic idea of this Secret Avengers, as kind of alluded to in the solicit, is they're willing sleeper agents, essentially brainwashed for their missions. Which is kind of a wild idea, but in a world with telepaths and other stuff like that, makes a certain smart tactical sense, at least for the people doing the controlling. I would hope it would go without saying that any super spy organization with memory implant technology should never be trusted, although I can't really remember why. It's this was one where I think Spencer actually, Nick Spencer the writer, did some fun stuff, came up with a clever kind of a twist, but not a, ooh, wow, how clever am I, but actually sold the idea of a secret Avengers kind of a mission and team. And there are a couple of questions I have on some of this stuff, but it's a bit darker take on the SHIELD organization than we've seen before, but not out of line with it, but more of a more pragmatic, ruthless kind of, we're going to get the job done sort of a thing. And I'm assuming Spencer has a solid rationale for why things are happening that'll be revealed at the right time. And I'm also hoping that somebody at Marvel kind of knows what that stuff is, so it can be revealed if Spencer, like, I don't know, leaves the title at some point before it gets revealed. And something where the whys and wherefores that kind of weren't in this issue and shouldn't have been in this issue, you know, pay off as they were meant to and stuff before. Because Spencer seems to usually have that stuff thought out before he begins his stories. And I think at some point we're going to get some reveals here that are just going to be, wow, either didn't see that coming, should have seen that coming, or, you know, whatever. And I trust there will be that kind of a payoff. But what I liked about this issue is it made good use of kind of payoff as setup. This was essentially a small mission to prove out the larger mission for the team and the series. And it made it work very well as a single issue and a launching pad for the series. Because I thought this had enough done in one aspect to it that I didn't feel like, oh, well, next issue we'll see the team get together and all that crap. No, we see a lot happening here, but it also raises a lot of questions. And to me, that's kind of the right mix for a pilot episode or a first issue, a way to start an ongoing story, is tell a small story that really is the right starting point and launch pad for the ongoing. I mean, what were your thoughts on that aspect or the series or issue and all, overall?
I thought it was an okay. I'm gonna go back. I thought it was an okay issue.
Mm-hmm.
I think the concept was interesting. You know, with the, okay, these guys are gonna, you know, allow themselves to be essentially, you know, like mind altered to do these things, and then they don't know about it. But I mean, the actual mission itself seemed kind of muddled to me. I mean, it's just like, okay, you know, the payoff wasn't really there for me on it. I mean, there was setup in here, which I understand.
To me, though, the mission was to prove the concept would work.
Yeah.
And at that point, kind of the payoff of this mission is the setup for the series. You know what I mean? This could have been done as a issue of an Avengers title, you know, a year or two back, and crap, it just didn't work. They found out what was going on, you know, whatever. But I see kind of where you're coming from on that. To me, what they were going after, the MacGuffin, if you will, was just totally unclear. But I think that was the point.
I think what it really comes down to is this is the kind of thing, and this is, I won't say it's unique to me, but it's one of my things, is I think a lot of people like getting this kind of a switch up in their Marvel superhero comics because they read a lot of Marvel superhero comics. So, you know, having something be different like this is a breath of fresh air. For me, if I want to read this kind of a super spy, you know, kind of story, I would rather just go and read Where is Jake Ellis or something. I don't need to read it with Marvel superheroes running around in it. You know, but it's like I like Marvel superheroes being superheroes, but
where can you read something though that has super spy stuff set in a superhero universe? Because Jake Ellis is just super spy stuff minus the real super aspect.
I understand that, and I'm saying if you want to read super spies in a superhero universe, this is the book for you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying I personally don't want to read super spies in a superhero universe.
That's fair. So you're not part of that target audience, and that's a very valid
and there's nothing
thing.
Wrong with it. I thought it was a good issue. It just didn't really click with me. You know, the whole reason for this series didn't click with me, but it wasn't that it was bad. It's just that it didn't click with me.
Mm-hmm. No, I can totally understand that. There's some titles that I don't care how good they are, I'm not going to read them. It's not what I'm interested in. And if this is one of those things for you, that makes sense. I think you may wind up missing out on what could be a very well-written book, but it doesn't matter how well-written the book is if, again, you're not interested in that stuff.
So, you know, I thought it was a decent book. You know, for me, I can give it on the story itself. I mean, it was a 4 out of 5, I thought. You know, it was an above average Marvel book. I mean, there are Marvel books that I read that are like, okay, you know, I thought this was a well-written one. It's just not one. And I'll give it another couple of issues. It's not something that I'm immediately going to pull the plug on, right? Like, mm-hmm. Katana, I just like, okay, I don't need to get issue number 2 of Katana. This one, I will give it another couple of issues. And if Spencer does something that really catches my interest, then I'll keep on with it. But I think I'm at the point now where I won't order subsequent issues yet. So I've got 3 or 4 issues pre-ordered at this point. I'll let those play out and we'll see.
That seems totally fair. I mean, to me, I see this as a 4 out of 5. It really sold the characters, the concept, the approach, kind of the advantages and disadvantages of it, yet has a lot of questions as to, okay, why did you know, Hawkeye and Black Widow sign on? Why would others sign on? How effective will this really work out? What price will people pay for, you know, both on having signed up and having, you know, potentially manipulated those who signed up and stuff? There's a lot of built-in intrigue to this title, and it seems kind of well-constructed from that point of view. And, you know, when I watch TV shows, when I read comics and stuff, particularly, you know, when ongoing narrative starts, I always like it when it looks like it's well constructed in so much as the characters are there for a reason. There's some built-in story potential to where you don't have to kind of shoehorn the next murder into this murder mystery or whatever, but it's also not just a, well, they're cops, of course they're going to have to investigate it. But there's some thought given as to new and unique and natural ways to have stories come out of this. And really, after a story arc or two, there will be things that will cause both the people doing the brainwashing and those having been brainwashed and stuff to have natural potential interactions. Either should they trust each other? Do they trust each other? Were they betrayed? You know, is this working? You know, whatever. And there's a lot of story potential there. Much more than just it's a covert team of Avengers. And this seems like a good use for some of the S.H.I.E.L.D. stuff. And I want to see where it plays out. And it would be interesting to see if they actually have some of these secret Avengers doing missions while Avengering, if you will, you know. So I'm curious where this is going to go. I am a fan of Spencer's writing and having a faith in that it'll have the level of payoff and kind of depth that I'm looking for out of this. But this is also something that, man, in the hands of another writer, in probably more often than not, I'd say, well, it's a good idea, but I don't think they're going to run with it as well as they could. So for me, very solid 4 out of 5. This, to me, warranted kind of a new number one, even though it's the same title. And again, much better take on the concept or whatever than before.
It matches well. I'll give it that. I think this is a title, especially people who like the movies. You know, you got your movie Nick Fury in it. You got your Phil Coulson in it. You know, it's got the S.H.I.E.L.D. angle. I mean, this, especially people who like the Avengers movie this last summer. I think this is the audience that they're taking a grab at. With a lot of the trappings of this series. I mean, they're familiar characters. I mean, it's certainly not the same exact, it's not the same setting or anything, but it's that kind of a thing.
Well, and there are concepts used here that I would frankly like to see in the S.H.I.E.L.D. TV show they're planning on doing.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily with the superheroes themselves, but the whole, you know, brainwashed agent, that kind of stuff.
What do you think of the art?
The art was good, but not brilliant. It's one of those that I think it fit the story and I think it worked well. It certainly conveyed stuff. But it wasn't one of those that I was just, you know, wowed by. There were a couple of places, particularly with Phil Coulson, where the facial expressions seemed, I don't want to say pronounced. Maybe it's not the facial expressions, but like almost trying to get the likeness and stuff. The face felt almost plastic. That was one of the things that just, for some reason, jumped out at me as I was reading it. You know, the way that face was versus how Hawkeye's was at times and stuff like that. So I think the artist is very talented, but there are a few things that fell flat. How about you?
Yeah, I thought it was okay. Not something that it's not something I would seek out. I had the same kind of back of my head kind of issues with some of the Coulson facial things. I'm guessing that
it's almost like they redid the art.
It seems brighter or something, you know. It like kind of pops out on the page more so. A lot of other things seem to be more shadowed and stuff, and his face just seems to like be boom, really bright. He's got really light skin or something.
It almost seems more realistic, if you will, than some of the other faces, even in those same scenes. And I'm not sure. It's hard to articulate, but that almost felt like it, I don't want to say like it was done by a different artist because it fits the style, but like it got reworked. Like maybe they had done the likeness of the actor and realized they don't have permission or, I don't know. Because the stuff's well drawn, but yeah.
It was an okay book. I will get another few issues. Marvel's got me down, you know, for two more on the next order. They double ship it next month. So, you know, I'll give it those 3 issues.
Cool. Well, it'll be interesting to see if it starts clicking better with you or not.
And I like Spencer. I mean, not universally, because I didn't really think his Thunder Agents was that good. But I certainly like Morning Glories. So I hope he doesn't drag things out quite so much.
But that's one where it shows that he's got a game plan and there is going to be payoff. It's not just he's meandering. And that gives me a lot more hope for this title than if it were from some other writers who just seem to wing it as they go.
Yeah. hopefully he can just keep writing. You know, is he doing other books at Marvel right now, or is this
I thought so, but I don't remember off the top of my head which ones he might be doing. Maybe one or two others, but off the top of my head, I don't know.
Hopefully he can keep up the pace of writing that many books every single month, because he's so far been keeping Morning Glories on a fairly regular schedule.
Yeah, and that's helping it a lot, too. Those are these are the kinds of stories that if you don't keep the story momentum up, can really kind of hurt.
If I got like a 6 month gap in Morning Glories, I would be done. You know, I would just lose track of what the heck is. I mean, I'm already kind of lost in almost any given issue of that book. If it went many months between issues, I would not be able to keep mentally up with it.
Yeah.
Be the kind of thing it's just like, okay, just bail on the thing and get trade paperbacks or something.
No, I can totally understand that.
Okay. Over in Indies, we've got the Manhattan Projects number 9 by Jonathan Hickman and Nick Patara. This is an interesting book. It stands out on the racks in the comic shops because the covers are so starkly plain. You know, every issue is pretty much, I mean, it's got like a pattern to it, but it's just like kind of this monochromatic type of blank cover with the logo in the middle and then like a little tiny blurb about the issue. So this one, you know, it's kind of like it's white with these very light gray diagonal lines on it. It's got the MP, the Manhattan Projects, and then it says, "What if the research and development department created to produce the first atomic bomb was a front for a series of other more unusual programs? What if the union of a generation's brightest minds was not a signal for optimism, but foreboding? What if everything went wrong?" And that's kind of general. That's kind of like the, you know, elevator pitch for the series. And they put it kind of right on the cover. So if somebody picks it up, it's kind of small type. You have to pick it up and read it. But, you know, it's okay. That can maybe grab somebody. And, you know, with all the other books on the stands, it certainly does stand out because of its simplicity of design. Then you get your standard Hickman stuff, which we've talked about before, where at various points in the story, we get these lengthy, I won't say lengthy, you know, like there'll be a page or two page or three page that's just, you know, a blank kind of chapter break. You know, in this case, we, you know, the first page, you open the cover and there's really nothing on the inside of the front cover. The facing page is also blank with a quote in the middle. And he puts these quotes in various places through it. And this one says, "The world, what is it but broken dreams and broken men, a thing well worth having. Clavis Aurea, the recorded Feynman, volume 1. And he puts these quotes in. And then we get 4 pages of story. And then there's a double page, you know, break that's 09, Brave New World. And then we get another quote page from the recorded Feynman again. Then we get another set of story pages that go out. And then we get, at the end of the issue, another one of these pages with the quote. And it's this is a Hickman thing, because we see it in his Marvel work also. You know, we talked about that on other books that we've seen with his. It's kind of stylistic, I think, something he just likes to do, break up his story beats with these pauses.
Well, it's the equivalent of commercial breaks. You know, just throw it in the story, pause for a little bit, and get back out. Now, he's doing something other than a commercial break, literally, but that's how it would kind of play out on a TV show. But on a book, it would just literally be a chapter break. They just tend to be small chapters.
Yeah. For him, I think what he's doing that's interesting with it is it's kind of like a pausing point in the story, and the quotes that he throws in are meant to be, you know, they're things from the world here, or actually, you know, just let's have people think about this, you know. So it's not like when you get a commercial break, it's a break, but then they're assailing you with someone trying to sell you DirecTV or, you know.
No, you're right. It's more like a chapter like break, giving you more time to digest what you've
exactly
just read.
And he puts the quote there, which again, it's something that's, you know, oh, what about that? You know, it's just one thing I find about this series is it's it's very thought provoking. You know, it's just the kind of crazy stuff that goes on in this series. There's a lot to go. And another thing I like about it is at the end of every issue, he has a page or two with the cast. And, you know, he has who they are and, you know, kind of just a little blurbs, you know. So we got Joseph Oppenheimer, super genius, American physicist, multiple personalities, Albrecht Einstein, highly intelligent, German physicist, drinks, Richard Feynman, super genius, American physicist, wormholer. And he goes on, you know, there's like 13 or so of these little circular pictures of the person with their name and, you know, some little blurbs about him. But there's just some crazy alternate reality stuff going on in here. You know, you have, FDR, and they have the FDR artificial intelligence, you know, so you got the, AI of Roosevelt. You know, and you got Harry S. Truman, who's just like this crazy Freemason nut who's like wearing these wonky costumes and just doing zany stuff. And this strange cabal of different Freemasony kind of people. This issue, we get Kennedy introduced in. There's just all kinds of strange stuff going on in this book that it's the kind of thing where if you like that sort of thing, this is a really great book. You know, it's just, there's so many layers of just, I will call it pseudoscience. And I don't know if I'm paying it the right credit, but you know, you got like wormholes going on. You've got these crazy, you know, weapons and teleportation and people, you know, cybernetics and artificial intelligence and, you know, not in this particular issue, but in other parts of the series, you know, crazy samurai attack forces teleporting from Imperial Japan during World War II to attack and, you know, just all kinds of strange things. And you got these scientists who, you know, as it says on the cover, the Manhattan Project, which is what was used in our world to create the atomic bomb. You know, what if there were Manhattan projects, plural, and they just created all these, you know, they had those super scientists and they created all these crazy inventions and other kinds of things. And it's all secret. And there's this secret society running underneath the world. And, you know, in this issue, we get the Kennedy speech about, you know, choosing to go to the moon in this decade. And not because it's easy, it's because it's going to help us organize our energies and skills and stuff. So it's kind of setting up what promises to be in the next one. You know, we're going to have this moon race kind of thing. Although these guys already have created some pretty advanced technology. What they're using this as is a blind, right? It's like, okay, we've already created all this crazy stuff. Now let's have an excuse that we can trot out some of these inventions, you know, as they're created by the, you know, race to get to the moon. It's really a series that's hard to like go through the specifics of this issue without just, you know, recounting scenes, but hopefully I've given some of the flavor of what goes on in this one. There's a lot of resolution in this one. There's the resolution to the Harry Truman arc in this one. And again, we're moving from him to Kennedy and, just some advancements between, a lot of the different characters in here. These, scientists are pretty zany. I like Patara's art. It, matches this, it matches the material well. And this holds together, pretty solidly for me.
So how's the story momentum on this? Because it was going monthly for the first, like, five issues, and then it seems to have gone bi-monthly. And I don't think that was intentional, because I think this shipped a month or two late.
Yeah, I think this is, you know, when we were talking about Spencer and Morning Glories, right? I mean, Hickman's writing so many books for Marvel that I think maybe this can't make him any kind of cash like writing Avengers does. And, you know, he's taken on all these Avengers books and putting out multiple books a month. It does slow the story momentum down somewhat. This is the kind of book that some of the back references and nuance of what was going on were lost on me because I didn't exactly remember all the crazy stuff, but I remembered the main story beats in it. This is the kind of book where if it continually ships every 2 or 3 months, I would find it fairly hard to follow in the you know bi-monthly type of format.
That makes sense.
It's not. There's plenty of room for it because he's got a lot of blank pages in here. There's, you know, I would really like it if there was a what has gone before kind of thing on the front cover with, you know, some blurbs about, you know, bringing you back up to speed on some of the key moments from previous issues in the arc. And we don't get that. But, you know, there's certainly plenty of room in the issue with the amount of essentially white space that is dribbled all around this book. That said, I give it a 4 out of 5. It's a really solid book. I enjoy it. It's very well done. I think that it would be a good read in trade paperback as well, because you'll be getting an entire arc in one place, and you'll be able to follow all the different threads and things that are going on that in the, you know, less frequent version are, at least for me, a little harder to keep them all current in my mind.
That makes sense. Because again, this is seeming to ship, you know, either every other month or every 6 weeks at least.
But it's a good book. I like it. But it's definitely not the kind of book that I could universally recommend for everybody. It's worth, if the concept of it sounds interesting, I think it would be worth picking up the first trade if you haven't read it and give it a read and say, okay, that sounds pretty cool. Let me try that out. If you read that and, you know, say, oh, what the heck, you know, then, I mean, it's certainly not for everybody.
Yeah, I tried the first issue. I think we even reviewed it on the show, and it just wasn't for me, so I dropped it with that.
Yeah, there's certainly a lot of strangeness, and this particular issue, it's good for me because it is ending the one arc and it's setting up the next arc.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody picked this up out of the blue and came in and read it, I mean, there is an awful lot of stuff happening in the first probably 2/3 of the book that, you know, I just would just leave somebody scratching their head and like, what? What is this stuff? Why is this stuff happening? So not something that is, I don't think, tremendously accessible if you just pick it up on any given random issue. A lot of books are like that nowadays.
Yeah, all too many of them are that way. I think getting it to where you can pick up any random issue is something that more creators should be striving for.
For this particular story, though, more so than some others, I don't know that it would be served well by trying to do that. But, you know, it's also the kind of thing that, especially since he's only able to do it infrequently, you know, I think maybe this is the kind of thing that you just bite the bullet and say, okay, we're going to write and put this out every, you know, twice a year or once a year as a OGN. That's like a 4 or 5 issue story arc, you know, and just go direct that way because it reads better that way, I think.
Yeah, I think from a reader perspective, that would make sense. I think you would still want to do incremental issues between as test beds, jumping on points, whatever. In other words, do a 4 or 5, 6 issue trade, direct trade. Then about halfway between two trades or whatever, do just a single one-shot issue.
Yeah.
To where people could sample that and it would lead into the next trade. Or, you know,
that's
what I mean?
Idea. I mean, it's like, you know, and that would be something that even between story arcs on a lot of these things would not be a bad idea. There's a lot of books could take advantage of this where you just every now and again have a standalone issue that brings people up to speed on what the series is about and what's cool about it and leads in, you know, not in too bludgeoning of a way, but, you know, leads into the next story arc.
But something that's both a done in one, but explicitly an on-ramp.
Yeah.
And again, like you said, try to do it without, you know, beating people over the head and stuff, but something that gets the basic tone, style, and premise, and, you know, what you need to know. Again, I'd like to see every issue be that kind of an on-ramp. There are going to be some, you're right, just can't be. But while some things would read better straight to trade, that then ups the barrier to entry of, well, do you really want to spend that much? And again, if you've got something that's kind of, you know, here's a sampling kind of a deal that's fulfilling and in and of itself and gets you enough, it's like, okay, now, yeah, I'll get that trade. It makes sense. But they're just, most creators and publishers aren't thinking in terms of how to get new readers on board and how to keep readers on board. And that's problematic.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Anything else that you want to hit this week?
There are a couple of things. Got the fourth issue of Avengers Arena, and I am still having problems buying that these deaths are real, and they haven't kind of sold me on this kind of quote-unquote counting in some way, shape, or form. And part of it is its own little isolated thing, and that's I'm still surprised that's an ongoing series. So I'm enjoying it, but with suspicion as to, you know, are we gonna never see these characters again? Are they really dead? You know, that kind of a thing. And that's a little unfortunate. Superboy continues the Hell on Earth story, and I really think that story has stalled out since they paused to go see Lex Luthor in that issue we talked about a couple of weeks back. It is taking forever for the showdown at the fortress to occur, and I think really the bottom line is the pacing on this arc just was not well thought out.
Just as a question for you, because I picked up a couple of issues of some of the other ones off of the rack in this arc just to see what was going on. I picked up probably that issue of Superboy, and I picked up an issue of Supergirl also. Is that the issue of Superboy that had the Justice League in it?
Yes.
Yeah, so I picked that one up, and then I picked up Supergirl.
Which issue of Supergirl is that?
I don't remember.
When did you pick it up? Because one, I think, just shipped this week.
Not the one that just shipped this week, so it would have been the previous issue.
Got it, yeah.
Yeah, because I haven't been to the comic shop yet this week. But the thing with Supergirl is she apparently has, like, gone native and is siding with this
yes.
Hell guy.
She had gone native just before the interlude with Lex Luthor.
Right. And that was pretty clear. It's just, how is that playing for you? I mean, to me, it's like, really? You know, it's like she's like a bad guy, right? I mean,
it has me really curious, particularly in light of some of the solicits for upcoming Supergirl issues, where it looks like they may possibly replace Supergirl.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't see a clear path on how you come back from this. I mean, it's just, okay.
It's given the way they've structured her character and set her character up in the New 52, it makes sense for her to be doing what she's doing. But I agree, it's a hard thing to recover from. But you know, they've recovered from worse with Supergirl. She went from the party girl to the more straight laced superheroic type at one point, and that was revealed to have been, you know, some form of kryptonite poisoning. So they can recover from this. It just may take a crazy plot device or two.
Yeah,
I have less problems with that than the fact that this whole showdown at the fortress is taking multiple issues of multiple titles. It's like, this is just drawn out too long. So hopefully it'll wrap up soon. The arc's about twice the length it probably should have been.
I think you can say that about most of DC's crossovers. The Green Lantern one feels like it's dragging way out. I mean, I feel like I'm getting the same story over and over again for like the last 6 months in Green Lantern books. And the Batman story dragged out for way too long.
Well, and as we talked about before we started recording, I felt the death of the family fell flat. The ending was anticlimactic and left me with a really, that's it? It was overhyped, I guess, as part of it. It wasn't bad, but it didn't really wow me, shock me, or make me think, geez, this is something everyone's got to remember.
Well, I mean, it did have some interesting misdirections. I'll give Snyder credit for not doing several things that I thought he was telegraphing were going to happen and then going in a different direction. I give him a tremendous amount of credit for that because I thought that Dan Slott was going to do the similar thing with Spider-Man. It's like, oh, I'm setting you up for this really dumb thing. And
becomes a double bluff at that point.
Yeah. And I thought, oh, okay, he can't do that because that would just be I wouldn't like that at all. And then he did it, and I didn't like it, so I dropped the books. But, you know, here it's like Snyder set you up for, oh, I'm going to do this stuff. And then he didn't do that stuff. And it's like, okay, well, that's somewhat interesting. But on the other hand, I didn't quite buy the whole setup for why everyone in the Batman family just doesn't trust Batman anymore. That I didn't get sold on that properly.
Hopefully people have read that issue and that wasn't a spoiler for them, but okay. They didn't sell me on the ending, and I agree, he didn't go in the direction we would have, you know, thought based on what he telegraphed, but to me, they either go in that direction and it's a double bluff, they go in the clearly not that direction, but the question is, do they do something that plays fair with setup and plays well, I buy. And there are some writers who are really able to do that and others that are not, and again, Death of the Family is worth reading, but the ooh, things will never be the same aspect, you know, it's like, yeah, really, come on, we've seen that before, whatever. Two X-Men books I want to talk about just for a moment. There was X-Men 41, that was the end of that volume, and really a weak ending to that series. It just kind of stopped. It was like the creative team maybe expected another issue to wrap up the story or something. And it was just, again, another kind of anticlimactic kind of an issue. And then the other one I want to mention real briefly is Uncanny X-Men number one, where, you know, there's a traitor inside of Cyclops' group. I was surprised who it was, but almost because I was kind of unimpressed by the art, and at first I couldn't recognize the guy. So until they named him, it's like, oh, that's who that is. It made interesting sense who it was, but it's not necessarily who I would have picked.
It's interesting how you say that, because I picked up the sketch cover to this issue just to give it a try. I've been picking most of the... If I see a sketch cover at the comic shop and it's cover price, and my guy typically has them like that, I pick it up. The Bachalo art was the only... I liked the Bachalo art in the issue. Nothing about the issue compelled me to keep going with it. It's just is another one of these ones that just too much crazy stuff going on tied into other X books that...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You know, it was just not what I felt was an accessible issue at all. And even that thing that you're talking about at the end, it's kind of like, well, given that I haven't been reading all of the X books, okay. You know, it's like I didn't know how shocked I was supposed to be by that or, you know, whatever.
Given who it was that's the traitor and given what that character has done in the last couple of months, I found it very surprising. But if you hadn't read the other stuff and didn't know the other things the character has done, you might not. So, yeah, it comes down to what level of context do you have for this stuff? And I'm coming at it with an extreme level of context, whereas you and other readers are going to have much less, some in the middle, you know?
Uh-huh.
And I think the big failing of the X titles right now is there are so many and the lines are so blurred as to what the difference is between them. You know, could you give a good elevator pitch for X-Men, Uncanny X-Men, and, you know, all the Astonishing X-Men, all the different various X titles that were sufficiently unique and different, and each one sold that particular title? And I'm not so sure. So I think they've not just overextended, but blurred the line between, you know, what the different ones are. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Uncanny X-Men, well, that's Cyclops and his group. Versus Wolverine and the X-Men, which is Wolverine in that group. Versus Astonishing, which is Storm in that. You know, it's like, come on. It's crazy. So, I've read a ton of stuff. Also read Archer and Armstrong, which continues to be a great read. I'm really enjoying that title. For me, that's the best of the Valiant stuff, and none of the Valiant stuff is bad. All of it's really good.
Yeah, I actually really liked a couple of the Image sci-fi books that came out this week. Storm Dogs number 3. Well, actually, one of them's a sci-fi. The Storm Dogs series I'm really liking. It's kind of out on a fringe planet, out on the edge of the traveled space, and it's kind of a murder mystery. It's one of these planets, you know, it's got like acid rain and weird aliens and, you know, something's going on. So it's kind of a mystery, kind of worked in with the rest of the story. Anyway, I'm really liking that series. The other one I really liked was Bedlam, which, has really changed direction a couple of times since and not in a bad way. from the first issue, and I'm really enjoying that one too. Really well done.
How about the second issue of Highways?
I read that. I liked it. It was, you know, it was kind of like, I liked that. Okay. You know, they're double blinds in a couple of places. Hey, here's this, here's that. And then they leave you on that note at the end. And it's like, okay, you know, I'll be interested to see where they go with this.
Yeah. It had some good stuff. I was pleased.
So there was some good stuff come out this week.
Yeah, definitely. And again, like I said, I got about 42 issues or comics or whatever this time. It's a ton of great stuff out there. Hopefully people are finding what they're enjoying. So I'm enjoying what they're finding.
Yep.
Anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
That's it for me.
Cool.
Join us next week when we discuss Justice League of America number 1 from DC, Nova number 1 from Marvel, and G.I. Joe number 1 from IDW.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.